Greetings, heroes, and thank you for answering the summoner's call. Presented by the Gamers Inn, this is a podcast for all fans of Fire Emblem Heroes and the Fire Emblem franchise. I'm your host, Ryan Murphy, and joining me, as always, my co-host, Eddie. How's it going, Eddie?
Not too bad. It's been a great week. The most important banner of the year has dropped, and, you know, apparently some special things going on in a couple hours or some such.
Yeah, I heard that there was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to summon on a Lyssa alt banner, so...
Yep.
Yeah. So I saw that preview, and I thought immediately, like, oh, man, Eddie's going to be all over
this.
Oh,
yeah, the moment I saw that silhouette, I was like, oh, yay, Lyssa!
It was, we were
that
duo.
That hair was very Lyssa.
Oh, yes, 100%. We saw that, and then I think the other was Frederick that was sort of previewed. So... lots to unpack. We already did. We got all of our Eclipse talk out in pre-show, so we're done with that. But let's talk about the banners. Running right now are the Emblem Heroes Ike of Radiance, goes until the 11th. Hero Rises 2024 top four rounds out on the 19th, and Double Vision, the new banner we're talking about tonight, that goes until the 4th of May. So, Eddie...
I said this in Discord. I still find it so weird the way they do the Emblem Heroes. And I know that's technically their emblem title. You know, Marth was the Emblem of Beginnings. Ike is the Emblem of Radiance. But Ike of Radiance. Marth of Beginnings. Just so weird.
I know. Yeah. It is... it's jarring, to say the least. But I guess, like, would it be... Ike, Emblem of Radiance, Emblem Hero?
I almost feel like, yeah, I understand what they're going for, because they're the Emblem Heroes, so it's they're the emblem of this or whatever. Yeah, but I almost feel it would feel less awkward if it was Emblem of Beginnings, Emblem of Radiance in their title.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I see that. I was just going to say, I haven't done any summoning. Mainly because I'm in between Fae Pass subscriptions, and the Double Vision banner just launched. I know I'm not as keen to get in there and summon it as Eddie is, and I'm sure Eddie has a great update for us, because he's been saving, I'm sure, for this.
I wouldn't say I've been saving, but if I had known it was coming, I probably would have been saving. But yes, everyone knows my obsession with Ike, so of course, it's not Ike I'm obsessed with. but I did dip into the Ike banner and actually got him pretty quickly, so hopped out just as quick. And that proved to be a good thing, because like I said, I didn't know it was coming until we got that silhouette, and the most important banner has since dropped. Some might say I went a little overboard on the Lyssa banner. But I did plus 10 Lyssa, since she was the 4-star hero on the banner. Along the way, I did get the other three units. They're less important. I did spark male Robin out of those, though.
Very good.
That Lyssa banner is so important that it's not that big of a concern when we next record. And just, you know, Faith does seem to agree with me, because we still don't have a new calendar yet. I guess technically at the time of recording here, the March one still has a day left. But keep an eye out on Discord, and once we find out when we're next recording, whether it be from getting a new calendar or getting a banner announcement, we will let you know.
Yeah, if I had to guess, and I've been known to do so, and be wrong, I would probably guess we're going to take a week off and come back with special heroes, which would be the bridal banner?
Definitely wrong.
Ah,
we just got special heroes, which is the Lyssa banner. Didn't you realize they were... I mean, obviously they're special.
I've written it right there, special heroes.
I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, this is the month of the Fallen Heroes.
Oh, yes. We've talked about that, yeah.
So we should get a new Heroes banner that are theoretically the Fallen Heroes. So expect no 4-star on that banner.
Right. It is odd. Well, I guess it's not odd. Oh, well, okay. I'll get the thought out there. It is odd that the young heroes are special heroes, and the fallen heroes are not special heroes, because some of those fallen heroes aren't heroes that appeared in the game, therefore are special alternative versions.
I actually think every fallen hero has appeared in the game.
Oh.
I could be wrong.
I think the Crom one felt like it was sort of like
Crom,
a...
technically, we never saw Crom, but theoretically, in the world that Lucina came from, there was some kind of Crom right. who had gotten killed and fallen and terrorizing. So I guess technically Crom we never actually saw in-game. It was just implied in the, you know, time Lucina came from, there was probably a Crom like him somewhere around, because Crom had fallen at some point.
That's fair. And all of the Three Houses related ones, that they appear, I mean...
They appear Blue Lions. In different paths, but yeah. they, you know, do appear.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah, the Edelgard is someone you fight in the Blue Lion path, maybe in the Clawed. I don't know for sure if you fight her in the Clawed, but you definitely fight her in the Blue Lion House path, the Fargus path. The Dimitri, I believe, was the version you fight in. Dimitri might have been kind of a mix of paths, but if I recall correctly, was Dimitri, the fallen Dimitri, did he have both eyes or one eye? Can't remember.
He had one eye.
Yeah, if he had one eye, he was kind of the Blue Lion path as well, but you know, before an incident happens to knock some sense into him.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find it. So you've got Dimitri. There's many versions of Dimitri, but we're looking for the fallen yep. version. Yes, he has an eye patch on. Dimitri Savage Boar. He's got one eye.
And... yeah, that's... because if I recall correctly, in the Edelgard path for... maybe you see this Dimitri in the Clawed path, but in the Edelgard path, I'm pretty sure Dimitri has both his eyes.
Yeah, I think so.
That might be the Clawed path Dimitri they're thinking of there for that one, because, you know, that's when he still loses an eye, gets captured, loses an eye, escapes, and never gets the sense knocked back into him like he does in the Blue Lions path.
Right. That makes sense. So, okay, correction. We will have new heroes to discuss on our next episode, not the Bridal Banner, because we've already established that.
We have new heroes, even if they're not the fallen heroes, and... who knows? I think they are running out of fallen heroes, but I could be wrong.
Well, we'll see soon enough in a couple weeks or a week or actually. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways,
we don't know when we'll see, but we'll see at some point.
We'll talk about it. Either way, we'll talk about it when we know more. And as Eddie said, the best place to learn immediately when we're going to be recording next, not immediately, I guess, but shortly, is the Discord, bit.ly/TGI Discord.
Heck, they might drop the calendar tonight, and you'll know by the time we drop this episode, but as the time we're recording, we don't know.
Yeah, we're still in a bit of a wait-and-see period, because Faye does not release the new calendar until they absolutely have to, which is usually when the old one runs out. Sometimes I think they'll wait a little bit, but...
there's stuff going on until the 9th of April on that calendar, and we're recording on the 8th, so...
yes, hence the eclipse jokes. Okay. Let's talk about our main topics this week. Our next Resplendent hero, Hannah Focus Samurai, starting on April 10th for Fae Pass subscribers. You'll be able to add Hannah in her Jotunheimer-inspired armor to your heroes collection. So if you were subscribed and got Hector, next up is Hannah. So look forward to that. All right, let's talk about our emblem hero, Ike of Radiance. On the banner, you've got Legendary Alyncia, Emblem Ike, and Mythic Embla on the red orb. For blue, you have Legendary Female Byleth, Isadora, and Meissen. On the green orb, you have Mythic Sather, Legendary Camilla, and Attuned Nino. And then colorless, you have Safi, Tina, and Mythic Arvel. So... looks like blue got the shaft there, outside of Legendary Female Byleth, but...
I mean, colorless kind of got the shaft too, so...
oh, you're right, yeah. Yeah. So, if you are summoning, red, obviously for Ike, and green, although Mythic Sather everybody has... I should know this.
I do get a kick out of how you wrote Sather in the notes.
I know. I almost tripped myself up, too. I didn't write the actual word. I wrote the pronunciation, and I still kind of had to compute in the moment. But yeah, green's pretty good.
It threw me off when I noticed it as you were reading through it. Who's Seether?
Yeah, also could have gone the opposite direction where I mispronounced it even more.
Then I realized who it was after a second, but I'm like, oh, okay. He wrote it like that, so he remembers to do the TH in her name since it looks more like a D.
Yeah. And so I don't have to like seek out the special character. I can just write it out. So, you know, little life hack there for podcasters. Let's talk about emblem hero Ike of Radiance. The Ring of the Radiant Hero is an ancient artifact that has been passed down through generations on the continent of Elios. And inside dwells Ike, one of the emblems. Ike is a sword infantry hero wielding emblem Ragnell. He has several new skills, including Great Aether as a special and Lagoo's Friend 4 in the B slot. Rounding out his kit is Defense / Resistance Finish 4 in the A slot and Canto Control in the C slot, Canto Control 3 in the C slot. His emblem effect is if foe's range is equal to 2 and units or foe's special is ready or triggered during, or sorry, before or during this combat, reduces damage from foe's next attack by 40%. This can be done once per combat and excludes area of effect specials. So, Tellius series, we talked a little bit about how Intelligent Systems is not following any sort of pattern whatsoever.
And if they are, we don't know what it is.
But that's true. I choose to just say the absolute, then be proven wrong a week later when there's like a Tellius focused fallen banner, and it's like, oh, okay, I guess it makes sense now. But you summoned on Ike. Obviously, the emblem hero allows you to, you have the hero itself, and then you can kind of pair him up with another hero. It'll be interesting when there's four of them, because then you can have a team, or I guess two. No, because you can't pair an emblem with an emblem. I wonder if it would be worth it to have four characters paired with an emblem, or two emblems that are paired with two characters. I guess you could do that now. We have two of them.
Yeah,
interesting how that will affect the meta as we get more of them.
The emblem heroes in Fae kind of follows the fantasy that they showed in the cutscenes in Fire Emblem Engage, but that wasn't the actual reality.
Right.
Where you can see the emblem out there fighting alongside the character that's wielding their ring.
Yeah, okay.
In the game, you have the cutscenes where, you know, little spoiler for stuff in Outrealm Gate, but I kind of dipped back into Engage and restarted it. And like you see, when Marth first, you know, awakens, or, you know, Marth and, you know, in like the opening cutscene, you see Marth and Aelir, you know, swinging swords side by side, both hitting like different enemies or hitting the same enemy from different angles, which when you're actually playing Engage, no, they just are part of your unit and they don't actually fight separately.
Yeah. You know? So in this case, you can have the emblem paired and also on battle in Fae, right? So that's kind of interesting that they can take that approach. The look and feel isn't really surprising. It pulls Ike right from the Engage sort of look and feel. It feels very reminiscent of what you would get in game.
And we have, 20 emblems before they need to start looking for new ones? Maybe if you count the Three Houses ones separate, you can add 21 before they have to start digging for new units.
That gives them a bit of time. Also, does this confirm sort of the cadence of release? It's going to be every other month?
We don't know the cadence. I mean, they now have three different types of heroes. However, they seem to have definitely slowed down on Mythic. There would be times in the past where you would have two legendaries in a row between mythics, especially since they put most of the OC mythics out separately or in pairs. So we honestly don't know how they're going to cadence between emblem and legendary heroes, especially since they're also sort of running out of obvious legendary heroes as well.
True.
Which I think is part of why they brought the emblems, is so they have something else to rotate in. I doubt we will ever get two emblem heroes in a row anytime soon. I'm expecting at least a legendary in between and maybe a mythic. So it could be that we'll have 2 months in between one emblem here, then 3 months between the next, or 5 months, or who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I think it's still early to call the pattern, but we did get it's even tougher to lock it in because I guess the first time they were introduced, it was an emblem and a mythic hero. So there was that combination. Yep. So
and then we had a legendary the next month, and then this month we got an emblem. Mm-hmm. We don't have the calendar, so we don't know what we're getting next month or this month now, since for April. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving it away from predictions, if you look at his art, I think this is not unique to him. It's happened a couple times. And I wanted to go back and check on Marth to see if it was the case, and it is not. But his special attack artwork actually has a somewhat different pose. So his attack artwork, he's got his sword swinging behind in preparation of swinging it, and then his special attack is him actually
having swung it, or yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting touch that they've given us four unique battle artworks for this character.
Yep.
It's very cool. I do like the emblem sort of look. I think it's interesting that you have, I think Engage had like more of like an animated style, like closer to what you would expect in an anime. And they kind of took that feel and ran with it. I think Three Houses was closer to like the 3DS era of look and feel, but yeah. They've really taken that approach in Engage and adapted it here really well, I think.
I agree. But I will be coming back in the future, along with all the other legendary and mythic heroes and on this banner, and some that are doing a little jig and shifting around from where they originally were going to be. Because in May, Ike and Lumera will be returning, Lumera having moved over from June. In June, we got quite a list, as Embla, Camilla, Sather all return in June. Marth will shift over from our August, Legendary Marth, Hero King. Sita will shift over from July, and Hather will shift over from September to jump onto that banner. In July, Alencia will be coming back. August will have Arvel, and Byleth will be taking a nice long nap until September.
Yeah, we're going to wake him up during September.
It was female Byleth in this one, but yes.
Yeah, interesting. September. I guess that's not too far out when you think about it. So,
yeah. I mean, especially with the number of actual legendary and mythic and now emblem heroes there actually are out there, even with the ones that are getting pulled out from being old enough into the remix banners, still quite a lot of them out there. So, but now to the most important thing, the reason everyone joined is listening to this episode today, the special heroes banner, Double Vision. The young hero banner everyone has been waiting for has finally arrived as Lyssa steals the show and is joined by male Robin, Emerin, female Robin, and Crom Duo, and Frederick on the Tempest Trial. Joking obsession aside, we do get an awakening banner for the youth banner this year, focusing on the royal trio of Elise, Emerin, Lyssa, and Crom, with the Robins joining them, and like I mentioned, Frederick will be the Tempest Trial unit, or is the Tempest Trial unit. And Lyssa is the 4-star unit, if yeah. I didn't mention that yet.
So her being the 4-star unit, is she cursed to forever be the 4-star unit on an Awakening banner?
I kind of mentioned that in a little bit when I discuss her specifically.
Oh, okay.
She does seem to be her lot since they introduced that feature where there's a 4-star unit per banner. But hey, that just means I get to plus 10 her, or yes. Have a better chance of plus 10-ing her.
A much better chance, 100%. I get that.
She is kind of the third wheel in the thing. You could say Emerin is also kind of a third wheel. It's really Crom and Robin that are the focus of the games. Lyssa and Frederick and Emerin are there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for her to be, you know, and Frederick to be the 4-star or the Tempest Trial unit, him being the Jagan of the game. Or Seth, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Although I feel Frederick really had more of a personality than those other characters, just based on my experience, but...
I'm not judging those characters on their personality, per se. It's more that they're the older unit, like for Unicorn Overlord, they're the... I forgot his name already. Joseph.
Oh, yeah, Joseph.
You know, same thing as Joseph. The older, more powerful unit that joins with you at the beginning that will help you, you know, power through those first levels, but are kind of a trap because if you focus on using them to kill things, then your other characters don't get the experience they need or stuff like that, you know? So they're kind of a trap, but they're also pretty useless near endgame because they don't get as many level ups and chances to grow as all the other characters do. You know, like, speaking of Unicorn Overlord, by the end of the game, you know, same level, but my Elaine had like 30, 40 more hit points than Joseph did. Maybe it was only 20 to 30, but still, he had a lot more health, a lot more strength, everything, because he had a lot more level ups. He had an extra 20 level ups. So
yeah, that makes sense. I we also talked a little bit about this. Maybe we talked about it on this episode. Now I'm forgetting. Did we talk about, like, obviously me mistaking this was a special heroes versus a new heroes, but the fact that this is a special heroes makes more sense from a lore perspective because, look, and I don't want to be that guy, but, like, you know, they don't meet Robin as children.
As a child, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as we know, they don't. Who knows? Maybe they actually did and Robin left and they forgot about him. But no, it's they're put your thing aside, and I mean, all the youth ones really kind of put your thoughts aside. I think there, I can't remember for sure, but I think there might have been some characters that shouldn't have met. Wasn't there young Mia? And I don't think Ike meets Mia until Path of Radiance.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe Mia was part of Grail's mercenaries, but I feel like Mia is someone you recruit during the game. So theoretically, you haven't actually met her when you get her.
Like, you're and, right. Like, I highly doubt all of these banners are, you know, lore checked, but at the end of the day, like, they're special hero banners, so it doesn't matter. Like, you can you can do whatever you want, you know? So
it's kind of the thought process behind most special hero banners. So
yeah. Well, let's talk about Robin Fated Vessel, the first Robin on the banner. One half of the Awakening Avatar duo, Male Robin is a red tome infantry hero wielding Fel War Tome. His sole new skill is in the B slot called Magic Gambit 4. Rounding out his kit is Ignis as a special Flash Sparrow in the A slot and Tip the Scales! Exclamation point in the C slot. So
Tip the Scales wasn't new. It was something he's had before.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
A Tip the Scales sounds familiar. Like, isn't that like one of his sayings?
Maybe it's
like
might have been, might be his legendary or something, you know.
I could probably, I can pull it up. I think, so it is, oh wow, there's a lot of Robins.
But it seems to be I'm pretty sure Tip the Scales is a unique skill, something that only Robin can have, something that can't be inherited to other people.
Yeah, it is, well, I don't know if it can be, so
it can only be equipped by its original unit.
Right. But it is new. It's not new to him. It was on Exalt's Deliverer.
Yeah.
Which is... That's not a Brave. Or is it the Brave Robin? Yeah. That is Brave Robin. So already we've got that skill out of there.
Yep. Yeah, if it's not new, clearly it was somewhere else, but it was another Robin, that, male Robin, that had it.
Yes.
So.
Tip the Scales.
It's entirely possible that a female Robin has a unit, a skill like that sitting in there.
And, you know, his artwork shouldn't really surprise anybody. That looks like Robin as a kid in his normal attire from when you see him in the video game. So there you go.
Next, we have the star of the banner, Lyssa, Little Lyssa Princess. Taking a cue from Fire Emblem Warriors in her Christmas unit, Lyssa joins here as a Green Axe Infantry unit in the 4-star focus of the banner, which, as we mentioned before, Ryan brought up earlier, it does seem to be a lot in life. But, hey, it just means I can plus 10-er, like I said earlier. Wielding the new War Axe, she, as a 4-star unit, she does not have any new skills, but comes with Bonfire, Defense Res Finish 3, and Times Pulse 3.
Sweet. So. It's, I do like the idea of Lyssa being like an axe user. I know in the video game she's a healer, and her first appearance in Faye was as a healer, but I don't know.
I think her upgrade does allow her to wield an axe even as a healer. I think she's the same class as what's his name? The pretty guy of the game. Libra.
Libra, yes. I was trying to think of like, oh gosh, I'm not gonna be able to remember his name, but that sounds
I knew it was an LI thing as well, but I'm pretty sure she's the same her, you know, evolved class. She can get that evolved class in, you know, the original game, so she already does wield an axe in there. But for, you know, warriors, you can't really have someone just running around the field healing.
Yeah.
It's not good gameplay when you have thousands of people attacking you.
Well, let's talk about Emrin, Selfless Exalt, the eldest of the bunch. Krom, Edlis's older sister, joins the group of young heroes on the Double Vision banner. Emrin is a staff infantry hero wielding Exalt's war staff. I think that pretty much answers why Lyssa has the axe here, because you can't have two healers on the banner, and they wanted to do, as you said, the three.
They've done it before.
They've done two healers on a banner? No.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an example of it.
Was it Tina and Safi a couple weeks, a month or two ago?
Oh, I don't know. That would explain why I can't remember.
Maybe it was Yulia and Safi or something like that, but wasn't that long ago they had two healers.
Like on a new hero's banner?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see if we can pull it up while you continue looking.
Yeah, you keep going. That seems like people would have been up in arms about. Anyways, she has a new skill in the assist slot called Magic Shield Plus. Rounding out her kit is Light's Restraint as a special, Poetic Justice in the B slot, and Attack/Resistance Oath 4 in the C slot. I know she has a tier 4 skill, but you probably could have given Lyssa a little bit more here and made Emrin the 4-star of the banner as well. Although I know there is that trapping of like, oh, always make the healer the 4-star, and which isn't necessarily fair, but if we wanted to give Lyssa a step up, that probably would have been the option there.
So it wasn't the Yulia banner, but I'm pretty sure, I'm double-checking. Safi was definitely a healer, and Tina, Playful Scamp, is a staff unit as well.
Huh.
So it was... we're talking about CYL8 in the episode, so it was January 25th is the next Resplendent Hero releasing at that time. So mid-January, we had a banner with two healers on the actual banner.
Wow.
New heroes in Rearmed Reinhardt. Was Reinhardt, Tina, Safi, Lara, and Tina and Safi were both colorless and both healers.
And what a way to make a case for Thracia 776, right? Two healers.
Final unit on the actual banner is the duo unit of Robin and Krom, Vessels of Fate. The second half of the Avatar duo joins here, assisted by Krom, as they appear on the banner as a Blue Tome infantry unit. They wield the Draconic Packs and have a duo skill that grants their allies on virtually the entire map, a 7x7 square centered on them, Rally Spectrum and Dual Strikes. They have a special A-slot skill called Fell Worm Scale, and a new Tier 4 skill in the B-slot called Attack Speed Link 4. They round out their kit with Tier 4 Infantry Null Follow-Up and Flare. So, yeah, young female Robin joining Krom, which is nice to see a little more versions of Robin out there. Versions of Robin and Krom, because I think most of the time we've gotten Robin and Krom being the male version of Krom.
Yeah, I think we've got a few duo, at least one Robin Krom duo where they're paired with male Robin. So to switch it up is really good to get here. It's interesting that they made Robin the focus with Krom as sort of the duo part of it.
They kind of seem to juggle which one's the focus on the Robin Krom duos.
Yeah, true. They do alternate as best they can. Although the last one was Krom plus Robin. So if I remember correctly. Yeah. Very good to see both Robins represented here. Although I think Intelligent Systems has been very good to showcase them both in some fashion. But the main event that you've all been waiting for, move over, Alyssa, we have Frederick, youth in service. Frederick is one of Elise's most devoted knights, and he joins his fellow young heroes, complete with suit and tie under his armor. As if you look real close, you'll see it. I think
that is very much a Frederick thing to do.
It is one of my favorite things. I remember playing Awakening and looking at it. It's like, is that dude wearing a tie? Like, it's so unique to his character. I think most of the time, the characters, what they wear, especially in that era of the 3DS, where you still had a lot of, like, the traditional looks of characters by class as opposed to just as characters. Obviously, once Three Houses arrived and you got out of the school act, you had a lot of, like, you had a lot of different looks and feels, so.
Yes and no. I mean, you had their looks, but I guess they didn't really change that much, but I believe they did change a bit based on your class, too. True. Or you had a choice of whether you want them in their class outfit or their unique outfit. Right. And they had a specific class that followed their unique outfit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's right, yeah, because they had the class outfit, as you said, they had their, like, war act outfit, which was unique to the character as opposed to the school act, where they were all in uniform.
The class that they felt you should have, the war act outfit and the class outfit matched, more or less.
Right. Well, for Frederick here, he is a Axe Cavalry hero wielding heavy war axe and is available through the Tempest Trials Plus event running right now. No new skills, but rounding out his kit is Bonfire as an assist, Attack / Defense Clash 3 in the A slot, and Close Guard 3 in the C slot. His artwork is really cool. As I said, he has a little tie there. What's this? Oh, yes. So if you look at his damage artwork, you'll see he's got his little bag filled with little pebbles that he picks up. Lore accurate pebble picking up Frederick. So there you go.
Yep.
Picking up rocks so Crom doesn't trip. And I don't know if he went to like a fortune teller and he was told Crom will die by tripping on a rock, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I gotta do this now. So
yeah, I'm not sure it was that. I think it just was an obsessive wanting to do stuff like that, or maybe when they were young, you know, around this time, Crom trips on a rock not paying attention, so you know, he automatically thinks, oh, I better make sure that doesn't happen again, you know. How dare I let my charge hurt themselves like that?
Yeah.
You know.
For sure. That makes sense.
So that almost covers us for Fire Emblem today, except we're going to step into the Outrealm gate. I have completed Unicorn Overlord, so we're waiting on Ryan.
Yeah.
Not to pressure you. Take your time. No rush.
It shouldn't surprise anyone at home. I'm woefully behind.
Yep. For some reason, after that, the other day, it kind of had me hopping around Fire Emblem games on my Switch. As I jumped into, played a map of Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes, and ended up restarting Engage. Not sure which, if either, I will stick with, but finishing Unicorn Overlord had me jumping back into Fire Emblem.
Very good. So you finish Unicorn Overlord, you've jumped back into Engage, and you've restarted Engage. And I know we talked about before Unicorn Overlord, like, talking about Engage and possibly me restarting as well. And I actually was having this conversation with Whirlwind, who's in the TGI Discord, about I don't know what I want to play, and I sent him sort of my list of backlog, and on it is Engage, and he called me a fake fan for having not immediately gone back.
I believe he was just joking, but
oh, yeah, he's definitely joking. He's definitely joking. But I felt that pain. I was like, he is right in that. Really, if I'm like struggling, I should immediately go back to it. But I am having this issue with Unicorn Overlord that I also had with Engage, where you have that initial push, which I've put like 15 hours into Unicorn Overlord. I don't know how I did that or whether the timer's off, but I'm only in the second area and it's the desert area. And we talked about how, at least in the Discord, we have a game discussions post for Unicorn Overlord. There is two big maps that literally are like a slog to get through because your characters move slow through the desert. And
which is common in Fire Emblem games too.
It's I get that.
The desert map, they're annoying and pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's just, I guess, like from a pacing standpoint, And I have no excuse for, I don't have this excuse.
I'll admit, those ones drove me crazy, because you either had to grind up a bunch of levels to fight through a walled town that was level 15, or you, and that was more, that those annoyed me more in the fact that what I tended to do in Unicorn Overlord is I would run around the map, even with the random guys also running around the map, and hit all the collection spots and, you know, the little sparkling dots for the divine shards and other stuff. And those desert maps, you couldn't progress. You try to go past it. You have to start the map now. Right. You know, you have to start the stage now. And that kind of drove me crazy. And they did that more and more throughout the rest of the game. But those were, you know, typical desert maps, annoying. Luckily, they were the only two you had to deal with.
Yes.
So
there's only those two, and I have progressed through them. And we talked a bit about this pre-show, and that it feels like Unicorn Overlord has a lot of story thrown at you in that first area, and it feels pretty like boom, boom, boom in terms of pacing.
And to be honest, for me, it's not so much the story per se, but the number of stages seems to dwindle the later into the game you get.
Oh.
You know, you're doing, it feels like you're doing 20 stages in each zone in the first three areas, and then you have 10 stages for the last two areas. Yeah. And I could be miscounting, misremembering, or maybe it's just that they kind of front-loaded the level count, because if nothing else, it definitely felt like as you got into the later countries, it felt like the level jumped up a lot faster. Or maybe it just was a lot harder to keep all your characters leveled up, but it definitely felt like, you know, in early game, you would have two or three stages all of the same level, and then the next two or three stages were one level up, whereas as you got to the later countries, you would have a level 24 map, a level 26 map, then a level 28 map, with a couple, maybe a liberation quest on the side that was similar level to one of those, or maybe a level 25 liberation quest on the side, but definitely felt like it was a lot more jumping high, faster and higher in levels as it got harder to level up.
Yeah. I'm also struggling with the fact that they are consistently adding new characters to your roster.
And you will run out of spaces for the characters.
Yes. It's interesting. You have the same issue in Fire Emblem games where you have a bunch of characters in a bunch of different classes, and there's no reason, like you might have characters you don't like and then you just never use them, or you might have classes that you're not a big fan of and you just don't use them. But for some reason in Unicorn Overlord, like they give you a bunch of characters and they give you a bunch of slots, especially at the second map, you still have room to add them as long as you're upgrading your formations. But it still feels like there's a lot, and I'm using like one or two squads more than the others. Like there are specific characters that I may like, but are weak to a lot of the stuff that's being thrown at me.
Yeah. Also, if you're playing the game the way you're supposed to, where you're, you could argue whether you're supposed to or not, but I would argue the way they have it set up, you probably are supposed to, or the way I believe it's Jimmy is doing in our Discord, where you're rearranging your groups every map. As Jimmy is pointing out, he's gotten into the third or fourth country, the northern country, and he's finding that trying to keep everyone up, because, you know, if you don't have them in that battle, they're going to be a little lower level. And if you need them for tactics reasons, they're going to be behind everyone. That's getting harder and harder to do.
Yeah.
As you progress. I mean, I, in typical me fashion, eventually started doing the, and Jimmy doesn't want to do that, which I understand, started doing the auxiliary stages a bunch of times to keep everyone up and level so I could rotate them in. But even then, I was pretty bad about changing up my units. There were some units that it was like, oh, they're not going to do good there, so they can go back into the barracks for now or find someone they can actually fight.
Yeah, like there were the characters specifically I'm thinking of are the characters with the big hammers. Like I have two of them, and I know you don't have to use them, or you can place them on the back lines of some other sections. I just really bad at like min-maxing, and I feel like I'm at a point where I do probably need to either figure it out myself or look up builds, like look up suggested formations, especially as I get closer to having like all six slots unlocked. Like, is there a strategy to like not using all six slots, or are you?
Well, you don't get to use all six slots. Max slot count is 5.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I thought you went up straight to 6, but there are 6.
I wondered squares. About that, but when you unlock the ability to get, you know, get a fifth unit in the thing, that's max. You can't level up any more past that.
Oh.
Which makes it even harder to use up all your characters, because there's, I believe, over 60 characters potentially.
Yeah.
And then another random side thing is that if you want to min-max other factors, you gotta hire a crap ton of mercenaries, because there's like over 120 towns to guard. So
yeah, so you can't. And I mean, they probably have so many towns, and then I know you can hire mercenaries, but like you get resources for guarding towns, so maybe that's why they have sort of like this barrier to guard every town. I don't know.
I guess so. I guess, you know, I probably could have pulled the people out of the towns in Cornea later on in the game, because I had no real need for the Cornean resources, because I already unlocked and upgraded every town. So unless I was going to grind out a bunch of honor by doing the bonus delivery quests, you have no need for all those resources. Then again, every guarding town gives you extra gold, so if you're running short on gold, you really want to have all those towns guarded.
Yeah, I haven't run into an issue with gold yet.
I haven't either. I heard some the people playing on the harder difficulties were having some more issues with gold, and maybe they were also better about going in and buying stuff. But with me doing the auxiliary maps and the, you know, other factors, I just never really had any gold issues.
Yeah. No, I haven't had any problems either. But I mean, I mean, this is pretty much an update, so I'll play more. It's certainly still on my list to play. I am enjoying it. If it falls off,
don't feel bad. It's, you know, you're not forced to play it.
I
play it if you're still enjoying it.
I am enjoying it. I think it just, it's a great game to play at the end of the day, because it is one that you can kind of zone out with in terms, because there's a lot of auto battling. I just find that some of the combat has been either a bit of a slog or too easy. So okay. I gotta give it more time.
To speed up your playtime, if you're having trouble with that, you can skip the actual battles.
Yeah.
Since they're auto battle, you know.
Right.
The zoom ins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I do that occasionally. I guess what it comes down to is like I usually do that if I'm trying to finish a map pretty quickly.
Yeah. I got to a point where, like, during the main maps, I would generally try to watch the, you know, battles just because it was kind of fun. But if I was doing auxiliary battles, I'd skip all those battles because don't need to see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll play a bit more. We'll talk about it. Eddie's finished it up. He's gone back to engage.
There's some post-game content, but...
Oh, interesting.
I may hop back in for that, but it's also weird and why, because of some other decisions. Essentially, they didn't do a new game plus, and there are characters that you can actually unlock and play with in post-game content.
Oh.
When there's nothing to do with them.
Huh.
By the time you unlock them, there's nothing but auxiliary maps to really do.
Yeah, and I know they've stated like there's no DLC, no post-game content arriving, so... Which is par for the course for the vanilla games. Yeah. So interesting. Okay, well, let's put a pin in that for now. We'll come back to it in either next episode or the episode after that, depending on how long it takes me to jump back in. But I do want to at least finish two areas to give it a fair shake. But I want to unlock more characters. I know there are many more characters that people have referenced in the Discord that I haven't come across yet, so I'm excited to meet those folks very soon. But that is going to do it for our episode. Visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com/fae. We mentioned the Discord. Check out the Fire Emblem channel in the Gamers In Discord at bit.ly slash TGI Discord. Be sure to check out feheroes.fandom.com, our go-to resource for Fire Emblem Heroes information. It's going to do it for this episode of Summoner's Call. We'll likely be back in a few weeks to cover the next batch of new heroes, but we will confirm in the Discord once we have an updated calendar in Fire Emblem Heroes. So stay tuned for that. Have a great couple weeks, and happy summoning.